Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Brain Healthy. I am your host, Jessica Aaronworth. It is so amazing to have Paul Martin in the studio with me today on this week's episode of Brain Healthy. Paul is truly the communication expert of the century. Paul graduated summa cum laude with a double major in linguistics and psychology, and he has also conducted research at top universities such as Harvard, Tufts, and Stanford.
Well, thanks for that very kind intro, Jessica. I'm not sure if I would call myself the communications expert of the century, but you know what? I'll take it.
Well, I'll call you the communication expert of the century because I know how much help you give me.
Well, I appreciate it.
If anyone has any questions about either written or verbal communication, Paul is the guy to ask. He knows more about communication on paper and tone and everything than anyone else I have ever met.
Thanks.
So hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited to be here. I'm glad that we figured out our technical difficulties just in the nick of time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a bit late, but... You know what? That's life.
That's life. I'm currently as you know, but I live right now. I'm in Argentina, where it's 80 degrees and sunny. So I'm enjoying the latitude of summer for us as fall coming in a couple of weeks. I'm ready to talk about communication. Brought some water.
Are we still on?
I can hear you now. I lost you for a couple seconds.
Okay, so tell, can I just laugh? It's just going to be one of those days, isn't it?
No, I understand.
We'll have to do this again.
You might, I'm not like I'm a technical expert by any means, but if it's like a strain on your internet, you might just want to close out of the blab for now. Save that for a day when you start that line.
That doesn't even seem to be an issue.
Okay, well, mine
does not seem to be the issue.
Well, okay.
Because
here's
on my phone.
An idea. How about if you ask me questions, and then if you disappear for technical reasons, I will just ramble on.
Awesome. That sounds great. Okay, so as I was saying, I don't know if you heard anything. I'll just start all over again. Third time lucky,
okay.
Right? So you have a really interesting story in terms of, you have really interesting background in terms of communications and linguistics and psychology and how it all fits together. Yeah, it's kind of, I've not heard of anyone who actually works the way you work, which is really neat.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So I started studying linguistics my first year of college. But linguistics in an academic context is very different from what the common, you know, like what a person on the street will think linguistics means. So linguistics, if I ask, you know, like person X what linguistics is, they'll probably say that it's someone who studies a lot of languages. But really, linguistics is about the structure of language. So there are many linguists who don't speak foreign languages at all. Instead, they just study how the language works, the various aspects of like the language's structure, how we learn language as children, that kind of thing. And then a couple years later, I picked up psychology. And again, you know, when you ask average person, like, what is psychology? It's, you know, dealing with mental illness, counseling, therapy, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a lot of, as you're well aware, there's a lot of branches of psychology. There's cognitive psychology, there's neuroscience, you know, the list goes on. So what I found really interesting is sort of the intersection between psychology and linguistics. So how language specifically affects our brains, how it influences our thoughts and emotions and behaviors, and sort of, you know, just the combination of how we feel and how we speak. So then the research that I did that you mentioned earlier, a lot of it was actually related to, you know, exactly that intersection. So at Harvard, for example, I did a study on schizophrenia about how, what kind of cognitive deficits are associated with schizophrenia and how this shows up in language. So then the idea was kind of like, okay, if we can isolate the linguistic deficits that somebody has when they have schizophrenia, we can kind of reverse engineer what's going on cognitively in their brain and hopefully figure out more about the illness itself. So that's kind of, you know, that's what I would describe, that's what I would say is psycholinguistics in a nutshell. And then, so that's what I did during college. Fast forward a couple of years, I've graduated, I'm in Argentina running around, and I connect with Danielle, who realizes that, you know, this combination of psychology and linguistics actually has a lot of relevance to what she does, which is, you know, brand management, marketing, that kind of thing. So,
and for those of you who, I'll just add in there, for those of you who don't know Danielle, who Paul is talking about when he says Danielle, he's talking about Danielle Sabrina, who runs an amazing group called What Vibes Your Tribe.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot that not everyone knows who Danielle is. yeah, I met up with Danielle Sabrina from What Vibes Your Tribe, DanielleSabrina.com. And then I started working, you know, applying this knowledge more to marketing and entrepreneurships, or entrepreneurships, just one of them. And working with clients one-on-one about how to make their language most powerful, most persuasive, et cetera. And then the crowning moment of my career was on March 8th, 2016, when I was featured on Brain Healthy radio show live.
Amazing. I'm so out of it. I'm like, oh, is that when we met? No, I'm like, awesome. So yeah, it's really interesting. I, you know, love the fact that you talk and you've actually done research in the field of schizophrenia and brain health within that, because that's what Brain Healthy is all about.
Right.
And
yeah, what I
found. And there's just so many implications in terms of, you know, our brain and language and communication and how we process everything. When you think about relationships, that's what every relationship is based on: communication, understanding. So it becomes so important.
Yeah, no, totally. And this is just before delving deeply into relationships. You were mentioning research, and I do think, especially, you know, in the field of marketing, but also just in general, there's a lot of like conventional wisdom that we have about language and how we're supposed to use it, which is often like very contrary to the research, which is why, you know, I don't have a background in marketing, but I actually, I think that helps me with what I do, because I have the actual facts that are supported by science. So like, for example, the conventional wisdom might be that when you're doing a radio show, you should not use the word ever, because it, you know, it's like, it doesn't mean anything, or like, as I just said. But then there's studies that have been shown that when people are talking on the phone to a telemarketer, that telemarketer is much more likely to make a sale if they occasionally do use the word or like. Presumably because it makes them sound more human and less robotic and less rehearsed. So that's just sort of like
I can take the pressure off myself.
Yeah. In fact, you know, use with abandon, as I have been doing. Because it's just, you know, it's the difference between you know, how some like school teachers in the 19th century decided that we should speak and how people actually speak.
Right. So what I'm actually hearing from you is that helps develop rapport and trust within the conversation and the communication that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, if someone is listening to this broadcast subconsciously, given that I'm occasionally pausing and using these filler words are like and a, that's, you know, subconsciously it's building trust with that person because they understand that I'm a real human, that what I'm saying is not, it's not like rehearsed in a shady dark room somewhere. Now the catch 22 about this is once you become aware of it, it becomes so hard not to notice. So, you know, when people tell you to stop saying the word like, and then you try to stop saying the word like, and it becomes impossible and they've ruined your life for the day. if you're like, you know, so self-conscious about what you're saying, that will not help build rapport. But yeah, it's that's precisely the difference, is that a lot of the time conventional wisdom about how we should speak is actually like sabotaging trust.
As a therapist, I find that so interesting, and knowing that we talk to a lot of wellness professionals, you know, there's so many rules and regulations out there, not within different professions, within different colleges, within, you know, what you should be doing, how you should be speaking, how you should be marketing, how you should. It feels like that should word is all around us. And it's great to know that the only should you should be doing is being yourself.
Right, exactly. Because this is just, you know, I'm sure if you wanted to, I could find some studies about this and that would confirm what I'm about to say, but I'm pretty confident is that people are very perceptive about when people are not being true to themselves, which is often why, you know, if I'm writing an article, for example, about something that I don't genuinely care about, like it will never be as good as if I'm writing an article about psychology. And that's simply because if I'm not being true to myself, it shows in my language. And that's something
right.
that, you know, has broader implications than me writing articles about psychology.
Right. If anyone has a question for myself or for Paul, he is a wealth of information, let me tell you. Please give us a call. You can reach us at 646-716-7979. It's still going to take me a little bit to get my wits about me. that really comes back to finding your passion, the passion in what you want to say, the passion in how you speak, because what you're saying is that's what comes across on the page.
Right, exactly. And it's whether, I don't know, to me the word passion, I feel like the word passion sometimes gets thrown around when it shouldn't be, when really it just means like interest or being genuine even. But that's definitely the idea. It's like finding your passion, finding your interest, just talking in a way that's true to you is how we build trust. It's how, like, and it makes sense, you know, because if you're talking about something you genuinely care about, people have every reason to be trusting you.
Right. Right. Because it comes off as genuine and authentic and not manipulative.
Right. Totally.
Or, you know, saying things just to try to get a response or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think that we're especially attuned to this in the modern world because of like spam culture. So we've all received like thousands and thousands of emails that say like amazing offer or like the best deal of your life. You can't miss this. And so we're accustomed to view something that sounds really passionate with eyes of cynicism. You know, like if I get an email that says like, Paul, you have to read this email, I'll immediately delete it, you know? Because it's spam, But like the side effect of that is that when someone genuinely is that passionate about something, I'm like conditioned not to believe it.
Right.
Right. So then, you know, so the issue there is convincing people through other means that you're passionate, which is, like you said, it's something that you have to really be in it in order to convince people of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I just, you know, came out of a session where we really discussed those positive versus negative voices, the positive brain versus
yep.
negative brain, and how it becomes easier, and our negative voices are usually so much louder than those positives. And I totally get what you're saying. In terms of emails that we get and email marketing, it becomes very challenging because I know that I get a million emails in my inbox every day. And it becomes challenging because I look at them and I go, well, yeah, that's what you say to everyone. Or
right.
that's what, you know, that's just a lark. Or what do you want to sell me today? You know, and
mm-hmm.
that does become my mindset for every email that I run through.
Right. Right.
So how can we start shifting that? I know some of it is shifting around some of the language. I think, you know, there's the popular, everyone recycles, it seems, the same popular subjects. The one people
right.
like now seems to be, did I do something wrong? Or, oops, I made a mistake in the link, you know?
Yeah, yep. And then, you know, then, like, they own up to their mistake and they become such a human.
Exactly. So within everything that just feels so gimmicky, how
yep.
do we create language and communication that doesn't feel gimmicky? And when
right.
I say this, I mean not only in the verbal sense, but also on the written page. I should have said not only on the written page, but also in the verbal sense, because I think with people having more discovery calls, again, they can come off salesy and not genuine because you have an intention behind what you want to get out of it.
Right. Well, in the verbal realm, so there's a, you know, there's this rule. I wonder if I can find the exact numbers even.
And this is why I love Paul, because he always has his hand on so much research. It's so totally amazing. Even though I came out of the psychology realm, I was averse to research. I just, you know, I love when other people do the research and when I read it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes some people love to go through like random psychological journals and others don't. Okay, I found the numbers. it's the 738-55 rule. I'm not sure if you've heard of this.
No.
And it's, oh, okay. All right. Well, it's been a little bit contested. But regardless of whether or not you can really like distill communication into three numbers, I think it's really like the idea is important, which is that the, so when we're conveying a message, when we're communicating with somebody, words convey only 7% of the message. Tone of voice conveys 38% of the message, and body language conveys 55% of the message. So if you're talking about not being gimmicky, I think that this thinking of communication in terms of these numbers is a really good way to appear genuine. So, or, you know, assuming that you are genuine. So these are based on studies where people had to decide, they had to like rate whether or not they believed a certain speaker when they were saying statements. So that means that 93% of the method of like whether or not people made these truth value judgments as true or false, 93% of it was about their tone of voice and body language. The words were just such a tiny part. So what this means is, you know, like I can have the most brilliant, true speech ever. It can be like, you know, it can be like straight from the words of Martin Luther King Jr. But if I don't have my tone of voice and my body language to accompany that, people aren't going to believe what I'm saying. Or only like 7% of people are going to believe what I'm saying.
Right.
So I think, you know, something that's in the realm of verbal communication, it's just so important to be catching your tone and body language. And oftentimes this is something I learned when I was recording a video of myself for, I was doing a video about some English language exam with a friend, is that when I was talking to her on this video, I looked incredibly bored. And actually we took screenshots of it after, and there's one moment when I was really just giving a death glare at the camera, but in my mind, I was acting completely normal. I was being like an absolutely normal person. So there was this huge mismatch between how I appeared to others and how I thought I was appearing. So it ended up being like, we hoped this would be about a 15-minute video. It ended up being like several hours because I had to practice just like making my tone of voice and making my body language convey my actual feelings and convey and match with the words that I was saying. So that was sort of a wake-up call for me in terms of how disconnected that we can actually be from the way that we're coming off to other people in communication.
And I see that a lot when I'm working with couples. I see that a lot in sessions. And it becomes so important in business and in life to really be aware and notice where the disconnections are.
Right.
I always say, like, the biggest argument people have is mishearing or misunderstanding what the other person's saying. That's probably been the demise of way too many relationships. It's probably been the loss of way too many clients for people, or the reasons why, you know, wellness professionals aren't there creating as the relationships with their clients that they want. And I'm kind of flipping back here because these topics are, it's so wonderful and so rich that there's so many different ways to apply this information.
Mm-hmm.
We can apply this information right into relationship strategies and help people see that the way you look when you're talking isn't necessarily how you think you look. If
yep.
your spouse believes you're bored in the conversation, that's
mm-hmm.
not going to have great benefits. You know, that conversation's not going to probably be all that it can be. And
yeah,
it's really important to start taking looks at each of us, who we are, how we do communicate, what our body language is like, what our tone is like. I know there's been so many times where I've just been so put off by someone's tone. And you notice this a lot over text. You know, you will read into the tone according to how you're feeling. So someone can come across as flippant or angry or uncaring because you're reading their tone the way you want to or think it should be read.
Right. Is it okay if I talk a little bit about the
oh, you want to talk?
about like in
sorry,
terms
I'm
of,
saying a lot.
No. That's I understand. In terms of like written communication, is it okay to delve into
yeah.
that a little bit? Okay. I have another question. Are we allowed to say a word that starts with B and has five letters?
Beard?
Yeah. So as you may have heard of this phenomenon called resting beard face.
you can use whatever language you want, Paul.
Okay. So as you may have deduced, I'm talking about resting bitch face. which is, you know, this well-documented phenomenon where certain people just naturally look angry. And I think I'm somebody who walks the line of having resting bitch face. And that, I think, precisely is, you know, part of most people who have resting bitch face were not aware of it until this phenomenon became so publicized and has a name now. But that can, you know, that can be such, this happens to me a lot. People at my university especially would tell me, like, my friends would say, oh, at first I thought you hated me. And then my other friends will say, oh yeah, no, I totally thought that too. And this isn't because I was being rude to them. I was probably being actively kind to them. But it's just that I looked angry or something, or like impatient. And people really pick up on that.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, with my friends, it didn't really matter because it was, you know, I got to see them all the time. They realized quickly that I wasn't actually mad at them. But, you know, when you're, if you're meeting with someone, if you're meeting with like a client, for example, it's like your first time, if you just have a limited communication with somebody, that can make a big difference.
Yes. It can make, it can make a huge difference.
And then, okay. So then what I wanted to talk about with tone, Jessica, there's too much to say.
Well, you know, you'll come back and we'll talk more, or maybe we'll put together a course for everyone.
Yeah. Okay. Both of those sound great to me. But okay. So then, in terms of, I'm going to go to punctuation and text. So you were talking about how on the written domain, you know, like assessing tone in a written domain rather than like a face-to-face context. And this is where it becomes 10 times harder. And because we've probably all been in this situation where we text somebody saying like, I'll be at your house in 30 minutes. And then they text back saying K with a period. And then at that moment, you know that like something is gravely wrong with your relationship. And suddenly it's like you're paranoid about what you did to upset this person, that they would send you the word K with a period. But note that, like, you know, if someone says okay with an exclamation mark, that's totally fine, you know. And this is because when we're reading something, so when someone is speaking, we have a good deal of control over our tone, and we basically know how the other person's going to interpret our tone. But when we're doing something over text, so especially when we're texting somebody, that's when we no longer have control over how the other person is going to interpret our message, because once it's written, it's out of our hands and they can apply whatever tone they want to it. So I actually experienced this really recently, a couple months ago in an old job that I had. One of my coworkers was upset with our HR manager because she said that the HR manager was being mean. And she sent me this text exchange that the two of them had. And I thought it seemed completely normal. But then she started reading it out loud. And the tone that she applied to it was so different from how I interpreted it. So she said, like, you need to tell me what to do or this won't work out. Where I interpreted it as like, all right, well, you need to tell me what to do or this won't work out. You know, like night and day. Like one of them is someone being like unnecessarily aggressive and rude to this employee, whereas the other one is, you know, lighthearted and is just like an everyday interaction that I wouldn't think twice about.
Right.
But that speaks to the importance of, you know, like when you are doing something via text, you know, when you're writing an email, when you have text on your website, you are ceding control of how that other person will interpret it. And that can lead to even more communicative differences.
I can actually totally, because I almost got fired over that.
Oh, yeah? Do tell, please.
Yeah. It was in my younger years. And I was working at a computer company, and I would walk around and I'd go, hey, how's it going? Hey, how are you? Hey, hey. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an email to one of my bosses at the time, and I said, hey, how's it going?
Right.
And I continued on with my email. And she came back to me a few weeks, maybe not a few weeks, but a few days later, and said, you know, this email, I just want you to be aware, but this email almost got you fired. And I said, well, what are you talking about? Because I'm one of those people who loses sleep if I, you know, offend anyone. And at that point, I would lose a lot of sleep. So I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, well, in this email, you addressed me and you said, hey. And it wasn't until I started paying attention to how you conversed with people around the office that I realized you weren't saying, hey, you were saying, hey.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, I think that little anecdote, actually, I think it's like relevant to a lot of the things that we're talking about. So definitely, like, you know, how hard it is to interpret tone when we're in a written context, but also just sort of the difference between how we should speak and how we actually speak. Because as a society, we have this crazy idea that the word hey is like rude, that we use it constantly. So if you address a boss or like someone in a position of authority by saying, hey, that's like, it's like scandalous, which is very silly. It's a word, it's a greeting, you know? And luckily, Jessica, I think you're on the right side of history here, because I've seen that this is definitely changing. Like in my university, it was not uncommon to hear people say, hey, to professors. But yeah, no, greeting someone by saying, hey, in fact, okay, this is, sorry to just pile on the anecdotes here, but a while ago, I had a writer who was producing articles for me, and she opened every email by saying, dear Paul, and then signed every email by saying, sincerely, her name. And I thought this was so bizarre. Like, it actually made me really uncomfortable to read every email, because my emails were super casual. I'd be like, hey, how's it going? Could you send me this article by Friday? Cheers. Have a great weekend. And then it was like, dear Paul, I will send the article by Friday. Sincerely, you know. And I thought, okay, like, why are you acting like I'm wearing a tuxedo? I'm like in a palace in France.
And it's funny. Not to interrupt you, sorry, but it's funny, because that's where we have to start looking within and going, okay, why am I being triggered by this? What is the emotion that this brings up for me?
Right. It's like deep down, hey is something I associate with familiarity and trust. So, you know, if my friends say hey to me, then if my best friend, for example, texts me right now and he said, like, dear Paul, could you please take a look at the, you know, it'd be the weirdest thing. I would think he was like joking. So when I have somebody who I am trying to establish a relationship of trust with, the intense formalities is something that personally to me, like, turns me off to that.
Right. Although it's interesting. Because I think it depends who it is, my lawyer addresses me as dearest Jessica. And at the beginning, now it's kind of annoying, but at the beginning, I'm like, oh, I'm a dearest. You know, it was kind of nice to read. But at the same time, part of you goes, okay, what do you want now?
Right.
What's behind the sucking up to me, you know?
Right.
That's how it's taken.
Right. No, that's also funny that he addresses you as dearest.
She. Yeah, she.
Yeah.
So if we are looking at our written word, where we don't have the tone behind us, we don't have the physical communication the body language. How do we make sure people are taking it in the right tone?
Okay, so I could my answer to this could be like an hour long, so I'm going to just focus on a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So one, here's an easy two-step check to make sure that your tone is checking out is first, when you write something, say you are writing an email, like an important email, read it out loud after writing it, because oftentimes like the voice that physically comes out of our vocal cords and the voice in our brain is not the same. But more important than you reading it is have somebody else read it out loud so you can hear it. So like, I don't know, like a friend or a spouse or even, you know, anybody, a stranger, have them read your email for you, because that is, you know, that gives you a sense of how someone who's not you, who's not like intimately familiar with these words, is going to interpret your message. And then, you know, there might be some parts in that email that the way that someone else says it is totally off base from the way that you wanted to say it. And that's where you're going to need to look at modifying your wording, modifying your punctuation, et cetera. Punctuation really is much more crucial than we give it credit for. And I'm not talking about like using a semicolon correctly. Although, you know, it is nice to know how to use semicolons. What I'm talking about mainly is, you know, how we use periods or exclamation marks or question marks, you know, the big ones, because those are taking the place of tone of voice when we're in a written context. So if I say like, "Nice to meet you!" exclamation mark, that sends a wildly different message from if I say "Nice to meet you!" period, from if I say "Nice to meet you!" question mark. And that in punctuation is where we're going to find the big differences between how I interpret something and how you interpret something. So, you know, sometimes this is something I've come across a lot, is some people are more liberal with their use of exclamation marks than I am. So their sentence in the middle of an email that has like 5 exclamation marks in a row might sound completely fine and enthusiastic to them. Whereas to me, it's like they're screaming in my ear and I like throw my computer out the window.
I'm guilty of that. I use right. exclamation marks way too liberally.
Right. Well, okay. Maybe you don't know, because
no,
like,
I do.
This brings me to the next point that like I was going to say I could talk for an hour about it. But just to finish up, it's like punctuation is what you'll need to tweak to really send like the right message. But what I'm saying about exclamation marks is that not everyone is going to interpret so we've established that when you're writing something, the other person has the responsibility of putting tone to it. But not everyone is going to have the same perception of it. So whereas 3 exclamation marks in a row to me might sound like you're shouting, to somebody else it might just sound like you're really enthusiastic, which could be good. So there's actually been a lot of research about this, specifically about like how people interpret tone based on different personality traits. So without getting too deep into this, I just wanted to say that like introverts, for example, people who scored low on extroversion scales don't appreciate exclamation marks. whereas extroverts, they both use more and respond better to the use of exclamation marks in written text. And this was done on a huge meta-analysis of Facebook posts. So what this means for you, Jessica, is that like if you are corresponding with someone who you know is like a super extrovert, like go for the exclamation marks. But then if you know, if you're talking to someone who's not, that's when you're going to think like, okay, like who's my audience for this? If I put 5 exclamation marks, are they going to think that I'm screaming at them? You know? And the answer to that is like it depends a lot on that person's individual personality. And their like relational style to determine how they're going to respond to like certain tone, how they're going to interpret the tone of a certain text.
It's interesting, and I at some point we're gonna sit down together and get some more information on this, because from that, it becomes so clear that if your ideal clients that you want to come in are extrovert, you're going to be writing one way. And if they're introvert, you're going to be writing a totally different way. And it's the same, you know, if someone is struggling with depression versus anger, how you're going to communicate through your website for each person is going to come across totally, totally differently.
Yeah.
And that is so exciting.
Right. Yeah, no, and I don't know specifically about, you know, people who've received different diagnoses, but just on, you know, like a very superficial level, you could see how that would be like wildly important. Like if someone is just a highly anxious person and you overload them with exclamation marks, like that will, you know, send them into like a, they're not going to be pleased by reading your email where it sounds like you're shouting at them for having anxiety, you know?
Right, exactly. And, you know, if you use language or punctuation in one way, someone's not going to get any sleep that night versus using it in a different way. Someone's going to feel really cared for.
Right.
And, you know, coddled.
Right. So this is like kind of expanding away from punctuation a little bit, but it's really, really relevant to what you're saying, especially if we're talking about depression,
mm-hmm.
because there's the whole concept of locus of control, which basically means
yep.
like the extent to which someone believes that they can control the events that affect them. Like, do I control my destiny or do other people control it? So there's an internal locus of control, which means that I think that outcomes are controlled by like my particular work or my attributes, whereas an external locus of control means that like outcomes are determined by fate or destiny and I don't really control what happens. Like internal means that everything that happens to me comes from me, whereas external is like everything that happens to me comes from other people or the world at large. So the reason why this is so relevant to having like a diagnosis for depression is that people, obviously, like one is 100% internal or 100% external. A lot of the time it's mixed. So, you know, if I have an internal locus of control, if I feel like I control my destiny, that means when I achieve something, it's going to be awesome. Like, I'm going to be really proud. I'm going to feel really good about it. But it also means if I fail at something, I'm going to take it really hard. It's going to affect me personally. Whereas,
right.
you know, so then like a very common correlation that people see in depression is someone who has an internal locus of control for negative events and an external locus of control for positive events. So that means when something bad happens to me, I take it really personally. I feel like I'm at fault for it. Whereas if something good happens to me, I don't take responsibility for it and just assume it's like some random like chance happening of the universe. So what ends up happening
right.
you know, is that I build up this cognitive schema where I cause all these terrible things to happen, but I don't cause anything good to happen. And everything that good that does happen is like, you know, just something that I didn't do. Okay. So that was kind of like a crash course of locus of control. But the reason why I think this is so relevant to what you're saying is that people who have, you know, people who have a different conception of their locus of control, like speak differently.
Right.
So this is like something, you know, this gets really deep into analyzing someone's speech, but it makes sense as like, I'll explain this. And I hope that everyone will be kind of nodding their heads in agreement.
And
before I get in,
can I pause you? Can I pause you just for one sec? If anyone has any
yeah.
questions, please call in. The number is 646-716-7979. Okay, continue.
Okay,
sorry.
We're totally on the same wavelength because I was just going to stop myself and ask you if we needed to reserve some time for questions.
It's awesome. Nothing's come in yet, so.
All right. Well, you know, feel free to interrupt me from my spiel. So if someone has an internal locus of control, meaning that they feel like they control something, they often use active voice. and words like do. So people will say like, I got an A on this test. Whereas someone with an external locus of control describes things as like happening to them. They'll say like, my teacher gave me a C on this test. So if anyone has kids, try to pay attention to how they describe their grades, because what I noticed is that, you know, in university, this is not like in middle school, that if people did well, they usually described it as like, I got an A. But if they didn't do well, they'd say like, she gave me a B. You know, but someone who has this like depressive schema that we talked about earlier might do the opposite of that. They might be like, somehow my professor gave me an A, but I got an F, you know, because that fits with like their cognition that something is like utterly wrong. So anyway, this is useful when you're dealing with somebody and you want to kind of understand them better by analyzing how they describe the events that are happening to them. You can kind of determine where they might stand on this like spectrum of locus of control. And that can really help you understand like how to communicate with them, understand like where their cognitive biases are and that type of thing.
So neat. I'm yeah. Enthralled by all this information. I'm just sitting back because I'm learning here. So yeah.
And actually, so there's I was part of a study that was researching this, which is probably why I have so much to say about it. But we had people do like just an experiment where they counted dots on a screen. The experiment itself was irrelevant. But they also had to fill out a questionnaire, which measured locus of control. People who had, these tendencies in people's speech went all the way down to like syntax that no one would even think is relevant. So for example, like internal locus of control, meaning they feel like they control what's happening. They often describe the task as I looked at dots on a screen or like I counted dots on a screen. Whereas people with an external locus of control said things like I was presented with dots on a screen or I was shown dots on a screen or there were dots on a screen. So like the people who felt like their destiny was out of their hands used more passive voice, which, you know, makes sense, because if you think of the difference between I was shown dots on a screen and I looked at dots on a screen, it's like was shown, using the passive voice kind of removes your agency from the situation. It's like something happened to you, dots appeared on a screen and you were there. Whereas I counted dots on a screen or I looked at dots on a screen, it's like you're definitely the agent, like you're the one who's sitting there and doing the task.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, the point of that little anecdote is that, you know, this isn't just on a very obvious level, like on a very obvious, like semantic meaning level. It's even like down to the syntax.
You know, yeah.
Figure someone out or to like understand them better.
You know, there's so much to learn and so much that goes behind the scenes of every good therapy session or every good business, every good communication piece. And communication is what makes our world go round. It is the better communicators we all become, the better place our world will be, I hope. I think you still
totally.
Have to have
no, absolutely.
Positiveness within you. But yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to share with our audience before we wrap up? We're just coming to the end of our show. But any last words, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I'll give a last thought because this is just kind of like a fun thing. This is kind of a theme that I've touched upon a lot today is the difference between how we are supposed to speak and how we actually speak, and how, you know, breaking the rules about how we are quote supposed to unquote speak sometimes actually builds rapport. And there's this like a funny quick study about this that involves swearing. So like people were shown words in different colors, and the words were either like table thing, you know, they were just like really basic words, or, you know, like the F word. And it found that like people not only recalled better the word, but actually they recalled better the color of the swear word than of the neutral word. So like if table was in red, they wouldn't remember that it was red. But if the F word was in green, they like definitely remembered that it was green. So that, you know, that perhaps is not so surprising that swearing actually, that swearing like increases how memorable something is. But there's been like a, there's also studies that show that it's not just memory, it's intimacy. So that Steven Pinker, actually, you may have heard of him. He's like a famous popular linguist, has shown that he writes about this in his book, The Language Instinct, that if you're in a group and you swear, you actually like are building rapport with people around you because you're like subverting expectations and showing that you trust them enough to like make yourself vulnerable and swear. So people are rated, you know, when people swear, they're rated on average as higher as being more trustworthy, which is kind of funny.
Wow.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I don't have the exact statistics for that one, but maybe next time I can bring those on.
Yeah, and it is so funny because we try to stick away from strong language, mm-hmm. you know, when we are talking in public. And so it's interesting that maybe there is a benefit, but we will save that for another
yeah.
show. Paul, yeah. if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, wow, great question. Can I, is it okay to leave an email?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if that was like normal.
we don't go for normal here.
Yeah. Because I need to start using Twitter more. I have a Twitter, but I really don't use it. So my email address is paul.martin.tba @gmail.com. So TBA does not mean to be announced. It means Tribe Builder Academy, which is the product that I'm working on with Danielle Sabrina, who we mentioned earlier. So that's the reason
awesome.
For the acronym.
Awesome. You can also reach Paul on our Brain Healthy Facebook page. I will send any questions to him, and you know, maybe he'll hang around our page more and
yeah,
answer
awesome.
Any questions.
Please do.
And you can reach me at brainhealthyclinic.com. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. Paul, thanks for joining me. I know I've learned a lot, and I know there's so much more to discuss, and I'm actually really excited about all the implications of what we've discussed today and how to put it all together so that we can help more people get access to wellness services and wellness treatment.
Right.
So thank you
totally
so much.
Agree.
Thank you so much, and we will see you next time on Brain Healthy.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.